Fuck it. The other three must be after JB's team.
Doc had an eye on the front.
No sign of them. Perhaps they always believe in attacking from the rear. Many have found it the safest, I suppose.
No sooner had JB's exclamation escaped his lips than he had fallen back into the gap between the buildings where they were holed up. He exchanged glances with Jack and started to move toward the far end of the wall. There was a hole halfway down where falling masonry had punched a gap in the remaining structure. Jack paused before crossing. It would give him a good view of any incoming, but would also leave him exposed as a target. He risked a brief look around the cracked stone edge. He received a face full of dust and stone chips for his effort, kicked up by a ricochet from the set guard's blaster. But it told him just what he wanted to know. The sec man was in the main body of the ruined building, and Jack had also caught sight of one crawler in the wreckage. Two where he could get them. He wasn't going to wait for them to come to him, like some wide-eyed creature caught in a wag's headlights, ready to be roadkill.
Et toi!
Jack rolled over the lip of the gap. He ignored the dust kicked up around him by off-target shooting. There was enough cover for him here, and as he came up onto his haunches, he already had the Colt Python in his grasp. There was no sight of the crawler. In the throughway beyond, JB was alarmed to see Jack disappear into the building.
Where the hell's that boy off to now?
But JB had to concentrate on the throughway. He checked the mini-Uzi, which was still on rapid fire. Any bastard who appeared in the alleyway would be chopped in two. He shouldn't have thought about it. His attention distracted for just a second. He was astounded when he looked up to see a crawler bearing down on him. JB soon found that he couldn't summon the will to squeeze the trigger and fire at the oncoming crawler. The crawler's mesmeric glance had him before he even had a chance to look away. Suddenly, Christy appeared at his side. She had her Smith & Wesson Model 640 grasped in both hands. She was looking to one side to avoid the gaze of the crawler.
Come on, you bastard!
The crawler had been hit by one of the shots, thrown backward as the .38 slug took a chunk from his left shoulder. It was enough to break the spell. JB finished the job with a quick blast of fire that stitched the crawler from crotch to neck. Jack heard the firing. He had been prowling the ruins, listening for the crawler, who he could hear circling him. He wondered if the crawler knew he could hear him. Knowing the crawler only had a blade, Jack stood upright, inviting attack, knowing that he was facing his enemy. The blade flew toward him. Under any other circumstance, it would be a certain chill for the crawler. But Jack had been expecting it. He slowed his breathing, and the world around him seemed to slow with it. Everything around him except the blade ceased to exist. It came at him in a tunnel of light, slowing as it moved, so that he could pick the exact moment at which to pluck it out of the air. Pluck it out of the air, spin it in his fingers, and return it from whence it came, using its own momentum to speed it on its way. Before the astonished crawler had a chance to move, the blade buried itself in his breastbone. Before he even hit the rubble beneath him, Jack was standing over him, the Colt Python directed at his adversary's skull. As the dying man tried to save his own life, Jack felt something clutch at his consciousness, directing him not to fire. But the dying man's attempt at hypnotism had no effect on Jack. The two groups emerged onto the main street, too cautious to assume that the other had completely disposed of the threat, yet driven by the need to move quickly.
All in one piece, more or less.
Ryan showed his own wound to Mildred as he noted her dressing.
Let's keep it that way.
The route back to the maze became more labyrinthine as they tried to progress. More of the roadway was falling into the earth. That which was still intact was often covered with debris from buildings that had been toppled by similar cave-ins. Ryan was thankful that they had affinity with them. The young man was sure-footed, and when they hit a dead end, he was able to backtrack and find an alternative route with little pause for thought. But when they reached the maze, they had that to contend with. There would be no markers left inside, and they would have to negotiate it with failing flashlights and tired reflexes.
Oh, great. Just when I thought things couldn't get worse. At least we won't have to find our way through that bastard maze, I guess.
They had reached the edge of Atlantis, and were confronted with a set of obstacles that they hadn't imagined. The insane megalomaniac leader, Odyssey, had extended his chain of explosives to run beneath the labyrinth. They came face to face with the ruins of the maze. Parts of it had already disappeared into the gaping holes that were opening up in the earth. Other sections remained, but were distorted and crushed out of shape, by the damage and stress of moving ground. Perhaps this could have been a good thing. With the maze now in pieces, the roof fallen in, and many of the movable walls no longer in place, it was in theory easier for them to pick their way through, if that had been the only damage. But the chem-damaged earth was brittle, and the fissures that had been opened up by the collapsing sewers and tunnels beneath the ground had given the fragile earth plenty of space to move, and it had taken this option to an alarming degree. Large cracks split the ground in front of them, in places almost 3 feet in width, breaking up the remaining ground into tiny islands. The edges of these were visibly crumbling, and there was no way of knowing how fragile these islands may prove to be. To get across to the maze area and to potentially safer ground, they would have to risk leaping from island to island, hoping that it wouldn't collapse beneath them. They could tell some of the islands were obviously safe, as they were already being traversed by wild beasts that had been freed from the maze by the collapse of the structure. Some the companions had chilled on their way in, others had perished beneath falling walls and sinking earth. But many of the creatures still survived, and howled pitifully as they gingerly stepped from island to island. At first glance, they seemed to be helpless, blinking in the light that was almost blinding to those who had spent so long in darkness. Yet they were still savage beasts, for as soon as they caught wind and sight of the group of seven standing at the edge of the open ground, their snouts were raised, and their determination to get across the islands became apparent.
Ryan, we get past, then we take route.
Ryan looked at him. Could he be memorizing each island that the creatures were using safely? Jack's eyes were fixed on the creatures, and Ryan had no doubt that this was the case.
Okay, let's go.
Ryan made to take the first island, but Jack held him back.
No, let me. If it collapses, maybe I'm quicker than dust.
With a fleeting grin, Jack took the first step onto one of the islands, his blaster ready to take out any of the creatures that came near. They were spread out across the islands of dust, numbering 12 in total. Some were feral cats bred large. Others looked as if they had once been dogs. They were keeping their distance from one another, wary of fighting each other when a food source was near. That might work in the companion's favor. Jack landed on the first island, found it firm, and picked another, scanning those around to see which seemed the most secure. As he leapt for it, so Ryan began to follow, as did Doc and Affinity. Mildred stayed back to assist the still shaky Christy, with JB bringing up the rear. Each time Jack found a new berth, they moved slowly in file, until they were strung out in a line across the islands of dry earth. It was an unpleasant feeling to be standing on dry earth that could give way beneath your feet at any moment. Ryan counseled his people that it would be best to ignore them until they got within a couple of island lengths before firing. The ravenous creatures, overcoming their fear, weren't as cautious. One the size of a wolverine and with jaws to match found the prospect of fresh food too overwhelming. It charged for Jack, bounding across three islands. The middle one began to collapse under the impact, but the creature hardly touched the surface. Such was the power of its initial leap. The silver magnum revolver barked, its deadly load ripping into the throat and thorax of the creature as it flew. The heavy slug spun the beast in flight, and it landed between the islands, the bloodied head thudding on the edge of the dirt patch where Jack stood. The impact was enough to start a reaction in the earth, the dirt crumbling away beneath the albino's feet.
Shit!
He had to leap quickly, without being able to choose where he landed. But the island held up beneath him. The rest of the companions, though, had a much wider gap to traverse. From all sides, the wild creatures began to spring from island to island, all caution lost to the bloodlust that inflamed their senses, the scent of the dead wild dog mingling with the odors of the companions to drive them into a frenzy.
Shit! Just take the fuckers out!
It was over in a matter of seconds, yet it had seemed like forever. And now they were all strung out across the islands, with Jack, Millie, and Christy separated from the cluster of Ryan, Doc, JB, and Affinity. The air was filled with the smell of blood and cordite, the islands scattered with the remains of what they hoped would be their last obstacle.
You get here, then follow path taken by beasts!
Jack gestured to the trail left by the deceased animals. Moving as quickly as they dared, the rest of the companions reached Jack's island as the albino forged a trail across those secured islands he had noted as being used by the wild animals. With nothing now to stop them, except perhaps the final dissolution of the Vill, they made rapid progress. When they reached the maze, they scrambled over the exterior walls, which were now only a few blocks high.
We follow the solid floors as much as possible, going over the walls and keeping as straight as possible. Watch for the pit traps and any bastard holes that have opened up.
Guess the rest is shot to shit.
It was an arduous trek, but made easier by the way in which the stone floors had managed to keep the surface together a little longer in this part of the build. There were moments when it felt as though the tension between the floor slabs was all that was keeping them upright, as they buckled alarmingly as the companions crossed them, suggesting that underneath the slab was empty air. It was a thought that each was keen to dismiss from his or her mind, preferring to concentrate on keeping going. They were soon through the maze and onto the chem-damaged ground that lay between the labyrinth and the forest. The earth was broken in places, with fissures that spread halfway across the empty ground. But it was obvious that this was residual damage, and Odyssey's infernal self-destruction devices had halted at the maze. They kept running and didn't look back. Behind them, there were more rumblings and crashes, and it was only when they were safely past the last fissures and on the edge of the woodland that they paused to look back. Beyond the shattered labyrinth, it was now easy to see the remains of the vill. Little was left intact, and the combined weight of the vessel and Odyssey's temple in the center of the vill now forced their remains through the fragile shelf of topsoil, Atlantis falling finally into the ground, the destruction spreading until it reached the maze, the stone floors finally succumbing to gravity. As they watched, the last of Atlantis vanished into a pit in the ground. It was the second time within weeks that the companions had seen an entire vill wiped out.
All those poor bastards chilled, just because of one crazy asshole.
The madness of power has always the same result, John Barrymore. And now we can claim to have seen Atlantis fall, just as it must have the first time. At least there were witnesses to its demise this time around.
They stood there until the sun fell and twilight began to gather. Only then did they turn to go, each wrapped in his or her own thoughts.
What can I tell them in Memphis? They will rejoice that Atlantis has fallen, and that we are now free to go about building our vill in peace. Although there will be many family left behind to mourn. But then again, to many of us, they were gone as soon as we escaped. But how do I explain that Lemur was chilled by Cyan, and that she was principal of the spies among us? How?
Ryan took the young man by the shoulder.
A word of advice, son. Sometimes, just sometimes, it might be better not to tell the whole story. They bought the farm during the chilling of Odyssey. Maybe that's all the people need to know. It's still true. If the people think that Lemur and Cyan died like martyrs, it'll give them a symbol to rally behind.
You are right. Come back with me. Help me to tell them. Help us to build. We would welcome the experience and wisdom you bring.
Well, there's many wouldn't agree with you on that. You don't need us. You've got all the wisdom you need, and you've seen enough to be able to handle anything that comes at you now. You're all the leader you need to be. Hey, you're the man who survived, right?
Perhaps. But what of you? Will you not at least come back to Memphis to recover your strength?
Ryan considered his exhausted troops. He and Mildred were wounded. JB and Jack were shattered from leading the line, as he was himself. Doc seemed to be back to his usual semblance of sanity, but now also seemed to harbor a dark guilt within himself. Christy was regaining her mental strength, but was still shaky. He shook his head, realizing that Affinity was regarding him with a bemused glance.
Yeah, maybe we will. I figure that we need some time to rest.
Maybe more than that. Only time would tell. Deathlands Atlantis Reprise is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King Williams, Christopher Walker, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. Additional original music by Dan Smith and Brian Patton. Script adapted for graphic audio by Bill Campbell. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders.